Is Your House a Money Pit? Up next on the Handy Guys Podcast.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together on that honey-do list, featuring head-to-head tool challenges and your questions. Here are the Handy Guys themselves, Brian and Paul. What a concept!
Brian, do you live in a money pit?
No, not me.
Well, how would you know if your house is a money pit? Are there, you know, is there something that goes off an alarm in your house that says you're spending too much money on this house?
Like no,
obviously there isn't.
But we watched that movie Money Pit, remember, and we reviewed it.
That's right. But the question is, what is a money pit? Well, interestingly enough, the website Service Magic, the company Service Magic, has done a survey, and they've tried to quantify what a money pit is based on the amount of money that people are spending on their home in a particular year. And so I thought it'd be interesting to see what constitutes a money pit. And so we thought we would bring on Craig Smith, who is the CEO of Service Magic, and he's going to talk to us about the survey that they did, and maybe we'll determine that your house is a money pit, Brian.
I don't think it is. All right, well, before we do that, let's give out the contact information. Okay, so you can always call us on our new phone number, 818-804-TOOL, or 818-804-8665, or use the contact form on our website, or just email us at handyguyspodcast.com.
Yep, that's where you get us. And up next, we'll be talking to Craig Smith from Service Magic.
Want great deals on tools that the handy guys recommend? Click on the Our Store button at www.handyguyspodcast.com.
Okay, Brian, I want to talk a little bit before we bring Craig on the air. About a money pit. You know, recently I did a video of my dishwasher.
Right.
Speaking of money pits, I was trying to avoid a money pit, my dishwasher, which hasn't been washing
dishes.
You
were avoiding calling Service Magic or
something. That's right. I was trying to do it myself, which, and I was trying to avoid calling Service Magic to get a contractor. And the fact is, I'm making some progress, but there was one more step I had to take that I did not show in the video that it's on our website, the dishwasher video. And I'm going to do another video. It's going to be the sequel.
The sequel, huh?
The sequel. Not only
We're
am I going
to... so big we need sequels now.
Not only am I going to show you how you take apart the bottom, the basin of my Kenmore Elite / KitchenAid / Whirlpool dishwasher, because in my research I learned that all those models, newer models, have the same guts. And in fact, my mother-in-law's KitchenAid, who I was at her house this past week, is exactly the same inside. Once you get past the looks of the front panel, which is completely different, and has buttons completely different and different settings, it's all exactly the same. So in the video, I'm going to show you how I had to dig a little deeper, and I mean that literally, to fix a problem. And I'm going to hopefully show you some close-up shots of the bottom of the basin, the valve where soiled water is released, and where the chopper is, and all that stuff. So
looking forward to
that's
seeing
coming
that.
Up, and we'll also use a better camera this time and better sound. So we'll hopefully get some better shots of that. So I know there's been several people that have commented on the site and emailed me questioning whether I had gotten to the bottom of it, and that was helpful actually, because I did a little more research, and in fact, I've now read the full training manual for my model, which is anyway. That's another show.
Okay.
But let's talk about those times where you can't fix things. You can go to Service Magic. That's a company that has referrals for contractors and things like that. If you're looking for a good contractor in your area, you can find reviews and you can sign up, and it's a helpful site. So check it out. But we thought we would bring on the CEO of Service Magic, Craig Smith, because he's going to talk to us about a recent survey where, as we stated already, they try to determine if your house is a money pit. Okay?
Let's get him on the line.
All right, let's bring him on. All right, we're here with Craig Smith. Craig, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm really interested in hearing about the survey that your site, Service Magic, put out with your membership. Particularly, I'm curious about what constitutes a money pit, a house that simply is, you're putting in more repairs than it's worth. And so this survey that you did sounds very interesting. Why don't you tell us about it, why you did this survey, and what you learned from it?
Yeah, at Service Magic, we have a large base of homeowner customers in our community. We have about 10 million in total that we've built a relationship with since 99. And we, from time to time, will survey them with interesting concepts and ideas to get their feedback on how they're thinking about home improvement and spending money around their home. And in this particular survey, we asked the age-old question, is your home a money pit? And tried to get a sense for how much people are spending on home repair relative to their home's value. So we collected a lot of really interesting data from this. We found that on average, 1% of these homeowners' home value went toward home improvement, or rather home repair and maintenance over the past year. And the average home value is about $225,000 in the mm-hmm. survey. So on average, people were spending about $2,300 on home repair and maintenance.
Now, that's interesting. I'm wondering, you did this within the last year, correct? That's when this data was collected?
Right.
Okay,
right.
So I'm curious at how the economy as a whole is affecting home repair. I guess a lot of times if you have, a leaky roof or something like that, you have to fix it. And
right. Grudge purchases, right? That you
right.
can't avoid.
And in addition, I'm wondering if people are actually, instead of, upsizing or going out and looking for a new home, perhaps are doing more work. Where, I don't know, maybe that evens out with the folks that are doing less work on their home in the end. I'm not sure. But it would be interesting if we had data from previous years.
It's very interesting, actually. We have another survey that we issue quarterly, and we look at trends within home improvement using the data that we have. Mm-hmm. And one of the conclusions we had from our first quarter analysis is that people are, in fact, doing two things. They're looking at their home as a longer-term investment.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw significant increases in home repair activity. And we concluded that that had a lot to do with the fact that people are looking at their homes as longer-term investments now, recognizing that they need to perform the upkeep and maintenance to avoid a money pit, to avoid a situation where you're on a slippery slope and small problems, that little leak in the roof that is a little frustrating but isn't causing any issues, maybe I'll let it go because, I'm ultimately moving here before too long. Now people are saying, look, I need to take care of that before it becomes a big problem and turns into a large expense.
Now, Craig, this is Brian. Do you have did you add in any additional sort of ratings? Did you have a scale when it comes to money pit versus something else that was maybe more dire, more drastic?
Yeah, so earlier when I was kind of describing the survey, the average was 1% of all the homeowners surveyed,
mm-hmm.
but we created three buckets of how you might define your home. And the first and kind of the lowest level is what we called a drain, meaning that you're spending between 1 and 1.5% of your home's value. Nothing to be concerned about, but starting to edge toward that money pit.
Now, tell me again, Craig, you're spending that amount of money since you purchased their house, or just within the last year you spent it?
That's in the last year.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Yeah, right. And
wow.
It seems like a lot, when I thought about it and looked at it. But then you start thinking about all the little things that add up.
Sure.
And the type of upkeep and maintenance that you're doing. And those expenses can certainly build up on you.
So you really really included everything from when you have to hire out the mowing of your lawn to when you fix something yourself and need to buy parts, all those sorts of things, everything that around taking care of your home?
Exactly. It's not just a statement of the services,
okay.
but also the materials, products, et cetera, that go into that.
Okay.
And all of that really starts to add up. The other was a sinkhole, where annual repair costs were between 1.6% and 2%, And that's when you're kind of starting to get the significant warning signs that maybe you're right on the edge of that money pit that can become very expensive. And then anything 2% or higher, we said, is definitely a money pit. And you're in that remodel or not remodel, but, you know, do I do significant investments and continue to pour money into this home, or do I look to move elsewhere and out of this money pit given the long-term costs of supporting this home?
Now, how does that jive with, someone might buy a fixer-upper and invest a lot of money up front in 1 year and then have a house that's below that 1% threshold after that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. This is kind of a reflection of the average year, and there's certainly going to be times where you have extraordinary expenses due to a scenario like you described, where you know going into it that you're going to have to make an investment and that it will require both remodeling and repair to bring that home up to standard within the neighborhood. But this is looking more at what kind of the average spending is over the course of time, recognizing that there'll be some variability. The other interesting thing as it relates to moving into a new home, 44% of the respondents in the survey said that they found something wrong with the house after they moved in that the previous owner failed to disclose. So the risk there, similar to the fixer-upper, you really want to make sure that you're getting a customer-rated home inspector that's independent from the real estate agent, or you can have the peace of mind that, hey, I'm not overlooking a few things in this new home purchase.
Yeah, that's an excellent point for our listeners. We did a whole show. We interviewed the president of the National Home Inspectors Association. I'm not sure I got that exactly
right. ASHI.
ASHI.
Yeah.
American
yeah.
Society of Home Inspectors. And we talked all about the importance of home inspections in a new home, or even in a, if you have a fixer-upper or that money pit, the value of bringing in a home inspector and helping you prioritize and understand what that house might need.
Now, Craig, you said that the entire average for your survey for all of the folks was somewhere around 1%. Is that correct?
Right. That's right.
I mean, that is a helpful number because, you always hear people saying, oh, I'm just throwing money away. I'm renting. I'm throwing money away. I should buy a house. But when I hear that, I always think it's not so simple. It's not always a bad thing to be renting, and obviously homeowners that purchased, two or three years ago would certainly tell you that, but there's a lot more expenses. They always look at as a house as an investment, but it isn't always an investment. It's a place to live and a place to build memories. It's an investment in that regards, but it's not always an investment that's going to make you a lot of money. You have to account for this 1% on average that you're going to be using just to maintain the home.
So. Yeah, and I think one of the key things to consider that people don't talk a lot about, but it all comes back to quality of life. And
right.
Residential real estate investment, I think, can be challenging for reasons that you describe. But if you're in a neneighborhood you like with community and schools and a park and
right.
Things that are really exciting to you, in that regard, the quality of life consideration is a very big one.
Sure.
And you have to pour money into that home. You really have to take all of those things into consideration, but certainly it can add up.
Yeah. And so, this is a helpful number and, for a new potential new homeowner or a young homeowner that they can, look at this number and try to put it into their budget before they move into a new home, right off the bat. So.
Yeah, it's particularly relevant if, you're making that first home purchase, like you said, if you're a renter today and you're trying to factor in all of the costs of owning, I think this is a nice benchmark for that starter home. And the average, again, was $225,000 home value in this survey. So that 1% fits really nicely with an entry-level type home and the cost that might exist there.
Now, what do you do? You qualify these 2% plus as money pits. I suppose if you're the one that owns that money pit, that's over the course of a year. Ultimately, it's unfortunate. There may not be much you can do about it other than hope that maybe the next year it's not a money pit. Sometimes you just, I guess, have to grin and bear it once you own the home.
Yeah, you do. You know, there's such an emotional connection to your home. Like you said earlier, that's where memories are created. You know, I've often found in my moving, you get into a home 3 years-ish, you become very emotionally attached to the neighborhood and to your neighbors and the people and so forth. And it's hard to contemplate moving when you've got that emotional connection. But, you know, our advice is once you're reaching that point in time where you're consistently spending more than 2%, you know, you'll have those years where something goes bad,
right,
and you'll have to do it. But if you're consistently spending that much, you know, you really need to think about, is this the right place for me, and would I be better off financially moving to a newer home or a different home?
It's the time to cut your losses, you know.
That's right.
That's interesting. So you do now. Do you provide is that information you can find on your website that gives a little bit more of qualitative analysis of the survey and some guidance if you're fitting into one of these categories and how you should proceed?
Yeah, there's really good information on servicemagic.com. Up in the upper right hand corner, you'll see a tab with articles and tools. And within that, you'll find a lot of good advice, estimators, project estimators, as an example, tools, visualizers, and things along those lines that can help you make some of those decisions.
Okay, well, that's very good. So our listeners can just go to your webpage, not only to find a contractor, but also to get that helpful information from your survey. How many users did you survey for this?
The total survey was 300 respondents.
Okay. So it's a sample of your the members, and you mentioned to us earlier that you have somewhere in the around 10 million homeowners that are members of your service or have used it.
Of the Service Magic community, right. Uh-huh. That have used us to find a pre-screened home service professional.
Well, Craig, why don't we wrap it up with you just telling us or our listeners kind of more about Service Magic and what your typical day-to-day operation is like, you know, what you do, what you offer for homeowners.
Including handy guys.
Yeah.
That's right. Our mission is really to create a trusted place for homeowners to find contractors that they can trust to do work around their home. We take our professionals through a 10-point screening to verify licensing, insurance, run a background check on that business, and give consumers confidence when making hiring decisions for services like maids, plumbers, remodelers, siding professionals, roofers, really anything that you can do in and around your home, you can find it at servicemagic.com. And then we've created a community, like we were just talking about earlier, of homeowners that have provided ratings and review feedback on those businesses to help identify the good businesses in a community. And we have over 500,000 ratings and reviews now on our businesses, 60,000 contractors in total through our service.
All right. Well, we thank you, Craig, for joining the Handy Guys and talking about the survey, this particular survey, and your website as well.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to chat with you.
You are listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
All right, Brian. I thought now that we're back here in the studio that was one of a very interesting interview, but not for what I thought. I thought it would be interesting to find out what the numbers were for what a money pit was. But what was interesting to me was what the average amount was that people spend on their home. And it's, you know, you don't really think of 1% of my house value I spend in a given year. It sounds like a huge number. But then if you start thinking about it, all of the upkeep,
that's,
you know,
right. And all
it
does, the little things.
Not like, the mortgage, but all the other stuff.
Right, like the guy who knocked on my door the other day and said, $100, I'll seal your driveway for you.
Did you do it?
I did not. I said, I can probably buy this stuff for $50 and do it myself.
Send them my way. That's the way to go. It's just done like that and no mess.
Okay.
So,
I'll tell him to call you if he comes by again.
But it does... does add up. And if it's 1%, now if you're looking at a 2% or more. And the other thing that I thought that Craig talked about that was helpful is, you know, maybe if you, that's just 1 year, that's not a big deal. But if you continue to be spending that kind of money to maintain your home, you need to perhaps reconsider where you live.
Quite so. Possibly. And, you know, there's people out there that will buy those money pits.
Right.
You know, they're not going to pay you the same price as a fixed up house on the block, on the same block. But people want those that want to make that larger investment. And if you're not capable of doing it, it might be time to move on.
That's right. Well, we thank Craig Smith from Service Magic for that helpful information. Hopefully our listeners find it helpful. If not, let us know. Contact us. And make sure you use our new phone number, which is 818-804-TOOL or 818-804-8665. That is 804, not 809, right, Brian?
That's 804. You can't read my handwriting.
So contact us there or our email address. And if you have a good question and you would like to be on our show, let us know. Possibly we could set something up via Skype and have one of our listeners on. But that's about all we have for this week. Until next week, I'm Paul.
I'm Brian.
We're the Handy Guys. See you next week.
Bye.
The Handy Guys will be back next week. Same handy time, same handy website.